on Friday, I left work early because I had an appointment with Ruth Graver, my grief therapist. At this point, she was really just a therapist, as the grief had subsided to a kind of dull roar, as if the monster in the closet had a toothache and wasn't coming out right now. But I still went to see her a couple of times a month. I had always assumed the therapy, which had started when I left the hospital, was supposed to get me to a point of acceptance about Dan's death. I wasn't there, not even close, despite Dr. Graver's best efforts. And why do you think Annabelle got upset? Ruth Graver was a no-nonsense, dark-haired woman who looked almost as intelligent as she actually was. She had the air of someone who, following an alien invasion and the annihilation of half the planet, would be organizing the resistance and handing out blankets. For all I knew, she was privately a speed freak with tattoos over 80% of her body and an obsession with the early music of Frank Sinatra. But at work, she was as cool as a cucumber. I recrossed my legs. For the obvious reason, I guess. She doesn't want me to replace her daddy by marrying someone else. She said you're still married to him. Right. It doesn't make sense to her that death changes one's marital status. It doesn't make much sense to me either, to be fair. In your mind, you're still married. Her voice was neutral, of course. No judgment here, Lillian. Just turn the handbag of your soul inside out and shake it. I nodded. Not just in my mind, but everywhere. When I have to fill out a form and the choices are single, married, or divorced, I check married and write in widowed. Why isn't that box there anyway? Bureaucracy is normally so all-encompassing. If I were a native Alaskan or a speaker of Urdu, I'd have a little box, but as a widow, I'm supposed to revert to single overnight. I found I was picking my nails and stopped. Graver's office was decorated in classic mid-century therapist, and as she waited in silence for me to continue my diatribe, I gazed at the familiar things on her shelves. A small pot a child had made by coiling clay, a miniature Eames chair that matched the one she sat in, joke action figures of Einstein and Poe. I knew nothing about her, although I sometimes tried to get her to tell me about herself. She wouldn't, which was annoying. I realized I still hadn't said anything and smiled. Why are you smiling? Because it gives me something to do with my mouth. I'm tired of hearing myself complain. I started picking my nails again. I'm tired of people asking me questions and looking hopeful when they see me with a man. Tired of little pauses in conversation when I say I'm fine, as the entire world waits to see if I'm going to start seeing someone. My throat felt tight, but with anger. If Dan had survived the crash but been a vegetable, silently drooling in a hospital bed somewhere, nobody would be encouraging me to date, right? Well, let's just pretend he's Bertha Masoning somewhere, and I'm not a free woman, because I really don't feel free. She said nothing, but the wrinkles at the corners of her eyes deepened. Concern. I knew that look well. I looked at my watch and smiled wider. Time's up, Dr. Graver. See you next month. I left, imagining her sitting there motionless, gathering dust until I next appeared.